A few days ago, Stephanie and I caught up with Thomas Hampson in London, and in just a few days, he will be in our neck of the woods, which is to say right here in Wisconsin, and he filled us in.
It's our honor to welcome America's leading baritone, Thomas Hampson, to the midday here on Wisconsin Public Radio. He'll be giving a program of American music called Song of America here in Wisconsin this coming Sunday. It will be an unforgettable afternoon with a distinctive American repertoire. Welcome, Thomas Hampson.
Thank you very much. Great to be with you.
Great to have you with us after hearing your singing for all these many years and enjoying.
Well, not that many.
Let's see. When did I get the Stephen Foster disc? Back in 1994. I've been enjoying it that long anyway.
Yeah, I made that when I was in high school.
Yeah, so I hear. Well, you look very young in the pictures. You know, you, like so many artists, are so versatile, but there's an interesting kind of crossover that you do between song, say Stephen Foster, and art song, and you'll combine those in the same release, the same CD. What distinction do you make between those two?
Well, that's a wonderful point of departure, because Stephen Foster was writing songs very much like English ballads and as we call them, parlor songs, whatever that might mean. But in fact, his idol and his model was Thomas Moore of the Thomas Moore's Irish Melodies, which is curious because it is kind of, that in and of itself is kind of a hybrid of folk song as well as manufactured texts for a song. And in fact, Stephen Foster would very often write his music and then put words back on top of it. But he also set words to music. Now, what the art song, for lack of a better term, and I'm really not crazy about the idea of art song, but we just have to call it that until I've invented something else. It really is about poetry, a poet, alive and well poet, reflecting on the issues of what it means to be alive or have that experience at that particular time in American history, specifically to this subject, and that in a dialogue with a composer who is inspired to flesh out the emotions of that experience or the harmonies of that context, if you will, so that we have a real dialogue of the eyes of the poet and the ears of the composer, and that is what the focus of this project is, and that as a kind of narrative, even a diary, if you will, of American culture becoming American culture. And that's what's been quite the challenge and is quite fascinating in putting these programs together.
And this program was done in collaboration originally with the Library of Congress. Mm-hmm. What was that collaboration like?
Well, the Library of Congress is just such a great institution. It is the largest, greatest public library that civilization has ever known, and that's not hyperbole. That's just a fact. What I think we should think of it as, and I'm quoting really James Billington, the Librarian of Congress, it's the people's library. It is our collective shoebox, if you will. The things that are held in the Library of Congress are the evidence of us as a people, and so they're the natural partner, obviously, with the huge repositories of historical artifacts, as well as poetry and manuscripts, and of course copyright and collections of books, and of course composers and music. The project started before the Library of Congress, and the collaboration sort of became obvious several years ago when we came across each other's spheres, and I was, what I was doing was putting a composer, Eleanor Remick Warren's library, in the hands of the Library of Congress, and Dr. Billington was fascinated by this whole project that fascinated me, and from that day forward, we've really never looked back, and it's been a wonderful experience. They have augmented the programs enormously, and of course have opened up treasures. Nothing private. I mean, it's just they'll open up anything at the Library of Congress if you ask them to. It's quite astounding. You can do original research on George Washington's papers online, never having gone to the library because of this enormous internet access. I think their internet website had something like 8 billion hits last year. So we're talking about this. Just a wonderful crossroads of so much information, so much knowledge, but specifically for this project, a great crossroads and intersection of American culture.
As somebody who sings this wide variety, not just of songs and art songs, but of course also opera and the heaviest of heavy-hitting roles. Do you find a special challenge in singing a really simple song like some of this Americana, some of these original traditional songs? Is there a special challenge to those?
I find a challenge in everything I sing. Your question is extremely apropos. There is a challenge to, or I find the challenge is to meet the music and the words in whatever relationship to metaphor and specificity they may have, i.e. text or libretto or poetry or lyrics, to meet that exactly where it lives. In other words, Cole Porter should sound like Cole Porter, and Edward McDowell should sound like Edward McDowell, and Charles Ives should sound like Charles Ives, and Giuseppe Verdi should sound like, and so forth and so on. And where sometimes with you know, classical singing, as it were, or opera singers, there's a little ghost in the back of our minds that says, oh my God, they may think that I actually can't sing the big stuff if I don't, you know, layer this a little bit. And I think that the challenge is to simply get off of it and let things sound, let your voice be the service of what the creative material is. That's essentially my challenge and my passion. I love singing Jerome Kern. I love singing Hugo Wolf. I don't see the contradiction unless they start sounding like each other.
Well, you'll be singing these songs of America here in Wisconsin this coming Sunday, July 12th at 4, and that's part of a program of Music by the Lake, and listeners can get information at musicbythelake.com, and they can also go to your website, hampsong.org, for more information about this program. It's a great website.
Thank you very much. We spend a lot of time, and it's getting bigger and wider and deeper every day. It's quite fun. And I'm building also a new website that will be launched later in the summer, which will be songofamerica.net. And that will be a very serious cross-reference database of poets, times, timelines, and composers, and, you know, a lot very specific to the Song of America thesis, which is slicing off every sort of 10 or 15 years of America becoming America and looking sort of at the diary of this experience of American culture through the eyes of our composers and the ears, or the eyes of our poets and the ears of our composers.
What prompted you to do a whole series of recordings of songs with lyrics by Walt Whitman?
Well, thank you for that question. Walt Whitman is such, and we don't have enough time to get into that. Walt Whitman stands as such a seminal voice of what America was called into being for, the practicality of how America should behave, and the encouraging prophetic words of how America should remain. I believe very strongly in Walt Whitman as a great prophetic voice of American culture and the notion of respect and democracy and clearly e pluribus unum. What a lot of people don't realize is that Walt Whitman had a profound effect and impact on composers of all nations. Curiously, he was brought really into the international forefront by our friends in England before he was actually taken very seriously or published a great deal in the States. And that was, in the musical world, even more significant because people like Charles Stanford and Ray Vaughan Williams very early on found the way that text was used, what poetry is written, this free verse, so much more readily composable for, as we say, through composed songs, and the narrative, this experiential song, for lack of a better term, and that that flipped back, and of course had an effect on later 19th century composers in America as well. So not only is what he sang important, but how he said it and what freedom of language he found in the English language that also, you know, then has another effect on people like even Yeats, So, I mean, it's just this enormous intersection and these enormous connection of concentric circles and associations. And, of course, that's exactly why it's fun to make websites, because you can spin around inside of that. But as a song source, I read over 500 or 600 songs and had to choose one for a disc, and you know, wanted to do something like 10 discs, and maybe I'll get back to it someday. But it is astounding how many people from Walt Whitman's time till today and still today set his poetry to music for so many reasons, both for content and structure.
Do you have a favorite Whitman song that listeners might hear in the program this coming Sunday?
Well, you know, what I do quite often is a short little song, and it comes from Drum Taps, and it has been set by many, many composers. It's called Look Down, Fair Moon, and it's a very, very short excerpt of almost cinematic proportions of gazing over this ghastly battlefield, and I don't care which battlefield it is, there are always going to be battlefields, and there will always be the fog and the dew lifting from corpses that unnecessarily died. And this reflection, you know, begging of a natural element, the moon, to at least gaze down and sanctify and bless this horrid scene, is, I think, one of the most poetic and beautiful human expressions that Walt Whitman ever had in his so-called war poetry. And what accompanies this in this composer, Charles Nijinsky, was a very young man of Egyptian birth, I believe, certainly Egyptian heritage. And he was studying and writing music in Boston, and he was at Tanglewood. And he had a premiere of a very, very important piece in the Berkshires in the 40s. And somewhere after the story gets rather sort of almost like a thriller, but somewhere either that night or the next day or something, he died of rather mysterious circumstances in the lake up there. He drowned or threw himself in or something. It was a very tragic short life, and somehow this beautiful music that he found, the language that he's had in several of his songs, Charles Nijinsky, for me, he found the absolute essence of this ethereal, and yet in the very diatonic section of where the text meets music, finds this very perfect syntax of musical expression in highly metaphoric and organic text that Walt Whitman writes.
Look down, fair moon, and bathe this scene. Pour softly down, night nimbus floods on faces ghastly.
Thomas Hampson, thanks for joining us for the midday today. And I
great pleasure.
Hope you'll stop by next time you're in the neighborhood.
I'd love to. Let's make that happen.
You'll be appearing in Williams Bay on Lake Geneva on Sunday, July 12th at 4 p.m. as part of the Music by the Lake Festival. Information is at musicbythelake.com, or you can get more information at the program at hamsong.org.